Good evening. My name is Lynn, and I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Lynn.
An old, old alcoholic.
Really?
Thank you so much, Sasha, for sharing with us tonight. And welcome all the newcomers to Alcoholics Anonymous. And thank you, Paul, for inviting me to share with you this evening. It's sort of a surprise or a booby prize or something. Our darling Howard could not be here this evening, so you will not hear the delightful baby elephant story. But I would like to dedicate our meeting tonight for his health and his well-being. Howard, we're thinking of you and we're praying for you. And I would like to thank the committee who's worked very, very hard throughout the entire year to put this together so we could have some fun tonight. And I know that we will. And if you're new, welcome to this new life, this new wondrous life that seemed so impossible just a short time ago. There is a roller coaster, definitely, and I've been on one since last October, and I haven't come to a full halt yet. I'm still sort of screeching on the tail end of it, and it's amazing how life can change quickly, and I'm so grateful as well for the program of Alcoholics Anonymous because it makes me feel grounded when the storms come. And I want to thank Paul again for giving me a commitment in Alcoholics Anonymous tonight. I love my commitments. I love to pepper my calendar with them. It makes me feel anchored in my sobriety. And as the years go by, it's easy to sail for months and months. And I'd be afraid to just go out the window very gently. So by having commitments, I know I'll be sober today and tomorrow, and I'll be there next week also. I'm still going to regular meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. I never, ever want to drink again. And the only way that I know to make that possible is to spend my life with you. And there are so many good friends out there. You're just so beautiful tonight. That's one of the benefits of being standing on this side, is to see all those beautiful, sober eyes. And when we think about what's going on in some places in the world right now, it gives me hope to be in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous where there is love and compassion and understanding, and it makes my heart really good. It does me good. Last October, and I'll start with this, I got prematurely engaged. I sure did. And in January, I gave a premature notice to my landlord that I would be moving out in May because I'd been renting there for about 15 years. And in February, I had a change of heart and broke up my engagement and couldn't take my notice back. And so I called my wondrous, beloved sponsor, Shirali. And what do we do? She said, well, you know, Lynn, unless you'd been pushed out of this place, I don't know if you would ever have bought anything. Maybe it's time for you to buy some real estate. And, of course, the fear and the big responsibility and feeling all growed up and tripling the amount of housing payments. And then in June, I made my first payment. Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. There went all the play money. And so I called Shirali about 3 or 4 weeks ago on a Sunday afternoon, and I said, Shirali, I don't like this. I hate the B word, the budget thing. I don't like to count. And my little dog loves fresh salmon, and I feel guilty if I buy it. And I don't know where I can go clothes shopping again, never mind manicures and pedicures. And you understand that here in Palm Springs, I think. You know, this is just not living. And she said, well, Lynn, I think you need a second job. Be careful when you talk to your sponsors. And so Monday morning, I sent an email to Irene, whom I had known for a few years, and she and her husband had started this little company in legal services 3 years ago. So I said, I'm looking for a part-time job, and can you use my services? I can do this and that and love doing this. Within 3 hours, she calls me. She said, Lynn, what a gift. I can't believe it. I can't tell you how much my husband and I have prayed just for this. We are a year and a half backlogged. We can't find anyone. And so she said, would you mind incorporating? So Monday night, I called Shirelle and I said, I got the job. This is what my life in Alcoholics Anonymous means to me. Having sponsorship, taking direction, being in harmony with the universe. And so I'm back to being able to have a manicure if I want to. And I had fresh salmon for lunch today. And so we're back in business. But it's been challenging at time, and the wind does blow. And when I was drinking, I had no way to solve these problems, and certainly no means to create those problems to begin with. And I'm here tonight because I'm an alcoholic and because I drank a little too much. And what made me an alcoholic is not so much how much I drank, but the fact that once I began to have that first drink, I can't stop. It's beyond my human power not to have more than two or three drinks. And I tried many times to control my drinking, and I always failed. But drinking was so important to me because of the way that I felt sober. And as far back as I remember, being 3, 4, 5 years old, I was self-conscious. I had a nervous condition. I was filled with fears. I knew the little girls didn't like me. I was afraid of the dark, of my parents. I was always uncomfortable. And when I was 13, I had my first drink at this little party with a girl. And before I finished that first beer, all the fears went away, and it was warm and comfortable in my gut where I live. It was magical. I could be jolly with the little girls. I didn't care what they thought of me. I didn't mind telling them what I thought of them. And I remember us laughing and feeling the warm glow and feeling connected and feeling that I belonged, that I was accepted, and it was wonderful. And I blacked out. I went to get my last beer, and they told me my best friend Susan drank it. I found her, and I slapped her in the face. This was my first time out, and that's not social drinking. But already the first time, drinking was that important to me, and it remained so until my last drink. I thought as a teenager, if only I had a good education, then maybe I could be happy like they all appear to be. And when I was 24 years old, I had a license to practice law. And my mom told me actually 2 weeks ago, because I checked with her. She said, I started school a year early. I skipped the seventh year. And then the director of the school told me I was so far ahead, I didn't have to do the 12th year. So I was actually 3 years younger than everyone in law school, and I got that license to practice law. And I know that I was a hard worker, I was a good student, I had ambition, I wanted to be independent, have a career. And then I thought, well, if only I went to California, I could be happy. And so I came here and I just drank more. And then I thought, if only I had a young, handsome boyfriend, I could be happy. And I found him, and we drank together. And he proceeded to acquire the big house and the Porsche and a motorhome and the fast boat, and I drank more. If only I had a cleaning lady. Well, I got one. And I supervised her work with a drink in my hand. My outside circumstances are totally irrelevant. I drink because I'm an alcoholic. And I'm not sure why it didn't work out with that boyfriend, except one time I slept with his best friend. And, well, see, it wasn't my fault. Of course. And I did not even like him. But that night, I was on a bar stool, and I was simply too drunk to go home, and he was the man next to me. And the next morning, his girlfriend found us, and she was my boyfriend's secretary. That's like tacky. And it was not too smart of a move that night, because that man was financially supporting me. I was emotionally unemployable. I was estranged from my family. I had absolutely no money. I was an illegal alien. The only people who were still tolerating me were his friend. But that night, it didn't matter. See, I finished my drunk anyway, because I had no choice in the matter. And so 3 days later, I got a call from her, and she said that all my stuff had been put in trash bags to come and pick that up. And I was totally humiliated. And I rented a room in a sleazy two-bedroom apartment, and I was sleeping in a sleeping bag on the floor, and all my clothes were on the floor, and I was living like an animal, and I didn't understand. I was then young, very young. And I had accomplished goals. I had moved to a new country. I had learned another language. I'd had friends. I had lived in a big house. And I didn't understand why I was sleeping in a sleeping bag. I thought I was just crazy, and I had no answer. All I know about my alcoholism is what I learned here from you in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous. So I was very lonely with my thoughts, and too embarrassed and guilty and ashamed to share them with anyone. And so the only answer that I had at the time was, I have to go back to the house. My self-esteem, self-worth, it was so crushed that I did not see myself living on my own, looking for a job. My life had become so narrow. The only answer I had was, you got to make it up to him somehow. And I had learned how to reseal Mexican tiles, and so I called him and told him I would do that for him for free. And so the next morning I showed up with my grubby's chemicals and knocked on the doors and good morning, and I got on my knees and I started to scrub. And he left for the office, and he came back in the afternoon, and I was drunk, and he asked me to leave his house. And I was so ashamed of the way that I lived that I decided to sleep in my car, because if I went to that little apartment, that roommate might see me and see how I really lived. So that night, I simply passed out in my car. And I came to in the morning to the sound of happy children waiting at the bus stop. And there is nothing worse when you're passed out in the back of your car to be awakened by the sound of happy children. My head was throbbing. I was very confused. I was sick. I was afraid. I didn't understand. And I just drank more vodka and made my way back to the house. And good morning. And I got back on my knee pad and scrubbing again on those tiles. And that day they were having a party. And their friends began to arrive, including that man. And they were just looking down at me, and it'd say, "Hi, Lynn." They were having a party playing tennis in the backyard, and they just ignored me. I was not wanted that day. And in the afternoon, everyone left, and I found myself alone with him, who had loved me, who had wanted to marry me. And I was on the floor, and he was having sex with me, trying not to touch me. And in the meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, we talk about moments of clarity, like they're a good thing. I'll never forget the utter contempt in that man's look upon me. And it pierced my soul. I went to that little apartment and I binged all weekend, but what happened was I couldn't get drunk that weekend no matter how much I drank. It didn't work. I was sober from the neck up. So I failed to achieve any kind of relief from my pitiful condition. There was no blackout. There was no passing out. I was just wide awake from the neck up. And so I called Alcoholics Anonymous on Monday morning, and the man said, "Would you like to stop drinking?" And I said, "Oh, no. No, no. No, I just want to learn how to have five or six and then stop." It's after that I get in all this trouble. And so he said, "Well, you're not ready for us. When you want to stop drinking, you call us back," and he hung up on me. Well, my friends, When Alcoholics Anonymous hangs up on you, it's a bad day. We really, really are the last house on the block. If you're looking for inferior companions, here we are. And so I can still see myself with that half a beer, generic brand, alone in the world, couldn't drink, could not drink. It was inconceivable to me not to drink, because for the last few years, I was just doing time in between drunks, see? Because I was so uncomfortable sober. I was drunk before you came to my home, as I was drunk before I got to yours. So not to drink was inconceivable. But somehow, alone that Monday morning, there was some kind of a quietness in my mind. And I don't know if I thought or heard or felt, Lynn, you're done. There is nothing left in drinking for you. This is your last one. So I called back Alcoholics Anonymous, and he said, well, this lady will call you back, and she did. We talked a bit, and then she said, would you like to go somewhere? I said, well, yes, I'm a traveler. I love going places. And I assumed that they would take me to the La Costa Spa, and I would send the bill to my ex, who was wealthy, no problem, and I could use the massages and the mud bath and the good food. I was tired. And so she said, great, my husband and I will pick you up in 20 minutes, pack a few clothes. Well, they did, and it took me to detox downtown. I was disappointed. But you know, I stayed, and the miracle of Alcoholics Anonymous began for me that day. For some reason, I came to believe that day that what you were telling me was true. I came to believe that day that there was hope. And the counselors there, they were telling me there were other people just like me. And they gave me the 20 questions, and I thought, oh my goodness, I've taken tests that were much more difficult than that. This should be easy. And indeed, I got 17 right the first time I took it. And you said, you're an alcoholic. I said, I know. He said, really? This isn't a joke. You're an alcoholic. I said, I know. And he said, well, what's so happy about this? And I said, well, finally someone is telling me what's wrong with me. I had thought myself of being a lot worse things than being an alcoholic. And I thought I was the only one like that, that I was a bad person, and that's why nobody wanted to be around me. And I truly was rejected and dejected and alone. All the doors had closed on me, and I thought it was because I was so bad and I had no hope. And now he was telling me there were other people like me, and that there is a way for me to go, to be sober and happy. Now, to be sober is one thing, but sober and happy, I could not fathom it. But I believed it. And that day I began to take the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I began to follow direction. And it's not due to any virtue on my part. I had simply run out of ideas. And when you took me in, I had already been beaten down to a level of risibleness. I had no questions about it. I was just going to do it. And if you are new and you're desperate, it's a good place to be. Just be with us and dive in the middle of this thing. We will not lead you wrong. This is such a beautiful way of life. Our hearts are so full of joy and hope and wonders. This is just the beginning. This spiritual side of this program is so attractive to me. I like the idea of being connected to my fellow men. I like the idea that there is some kind of an intelligence that's planning, that's supporting all of this. I like to think that there is something behind, bigger and above me, and I like to be a part of all of you, to be one amongst others. And you're teaching me so well. I have a little story to tell you that's occurred recently. And it's so much the principles of Alcoholics Anonymous in all our affairs. About 3 weeks ago, the little janitor in my company, her name is Maria, and we all love Maria, who scrubs and comes out of our toilets with a big smile on her face, and she just talks to everybody with her heavy accent, and she's beautiful, and she's in her 40s, and she just loves being there with us. And she was telling me she had to leave to take the bus, and I said, how long does it take you to take the bus? She said, 2.5 hours one way. And she had two big tears down her cheek. She said, it's a hard life, Lynn, but it's a good life. And it broke my heart. You put sensitivity in my heart. You gave me the ability to feel for others and to have compassion and to carry a message. And what we have is a program of action. So I said, Maria, I don't want you on that bus anymore. We'll find a way to get you on the coaster. And I thought, if I feel that way, I bet my coworkers feel the same way. So I sent emails to the entire department, over 100 people, about our beautiful, beloved Maria, and about her having two children in college and the sacrifices that she makes to support their education, which is to take the bus to come to work. And let's maybe buy her a coaster pass for a year if you would like to contribute. Well, within the next 2 weeks, I'm walking down the hallways and people are stuffing checks and cash in my pockets, and we raised $1,250. So I made this big check like they do for the sweepstakes. Well, we're alcoholics, we do big things. And up, I was calling to HR because this was getting so big. So bought her beautiful flowers that matched the card that I made, that matched the check, that matched the balloons. And there were over 40 people at that little party. And it was a surprise. And she just cried. She said, this is my lucky year. This is my lucky year. And you know, in the corporate world, you do that for the president, not for the janitor. But this is what you taught me here, principles before personalities, and the way we treat our newcomers, just like the old timers. This is a true democracy. And I was so grateful to have AA in me, to see there was a need, to have the confidence to know this is a God thing or a higher power thing, and to just move forward with it. So my heart is so full. If you're new this evening, please stay with us long enough so you can begin to feel the way that we sound or look to you tonight. This is so much more than just not drinking. If I still felt the way that I did before I went to detox downtown June 21st, 1982, I don't know if I'd still be here. But it truly gets better year after year, provided we follow the certain suggestions in the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And make sure that you have a big book before you leave this weekend. It's not the most interesting book I have ever read, but by far the most important. It's a lifesaver. And you must read all the fine prints, because sometimes there are little surprises that we sponsor don't necessarily tell you. And there are also little freebies, like on page 133, 134, it is said that all alcoholics must have chocolate by their side for quick fix. It's in here. So I always have chocolate by my side, because I want to make sure I don't cut corners. There is, to me, a major disappointment in it, though. On page 25, it is said that we were rocketed into the fourth dimension, and I was not rocketed anywhere. I was more like oozed into it over a period of 10 to 15 years. But, you know, I think I am one of the sicker ones. I come truly, and I have to take myself where I am. I come from a very sick family, like emotionally immature, sick family. And it's been my observation that we don't all come to Alcoholics Anonymous evenly. We're more staggered, like around the racetrack, and I was a little far behind, and I don't know if I will ever catch up, but I promise you that this is the best Lynn that I've ever been. And I plan on continuing to better myself. We say we asked this higher power to remove our shortcomings, and well, to remove does not mean to eliminate or to eradicate. It means to put a distance between. So that monkey is just like a yard behind me, very much alive. And all I have to do is slow down a little bit and maybe not do my reading in the morning for a few days, or maybe have something in my head and waiting a few days to talk to my sponsor about it, and I can feel it catching up with me. I've had a little experience with complacency. In my 20th year of sobriety, I think that complacency may be the deadliest word in the vocabulary for us, if daily is the greatest. I just got bored with meetings, and I didn't call my sponsor to tell her, Shirelli, I'm bored. I just decided to change my meetings. And up to that point, I had been in AA boot camp. I was raised in Carlsbad. And over there, they don't care what we think or how we feel. They just want us to do it. And sometimes they really, really hurt your feelings. But by gosh, we stay sober. And they were telling me to have at least 2 regular meetings with commitments each week, plus 2 other meetings each week, to take the steps every day, to sponsor, if asked, to be sponsored, and then to participate on a daily basis in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I'd been doing this for 20 years. But then when I decided to change my meetings, I didn't have to have commitments. And so I started to float meetings and try things out. And would you know, within about 2 months from 4 meetings, I was down to 2 or 3 a week. And then Monday night has always been a meeting night for me for 20 years. But one night, it was cold. Now, how cold does it get in California? And so I thought I'd go tomorrow, Monday, 6 o'clock, Tuesday, 6 o'clock, same thing. And then the following Monday, it was raining. I thought, well, I'll just go tomorrow. And you know, I counted, and I hadn't been to a meeting in 10 days. So that Monday night, I braved the rain, went to the meeting, raised my hand, and told them what was happening, and I became the cookie lady. And then on Thursday, I went to the women's meeting, raised my hand, they were having some election, and I became the treasurer, and one more time was back in business and have been since. But this is the danger to me of complacency. It is scary. Can't feel it, can't see it, can't taste it. There it is. That's why, Paul, I'm so grateful when you call me. It doesn't matter if it's for tomorrow, if I have to cancel something else. There is nothing I'd rather do than being at a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, not only because you saved my life, but because we have so much fun. And also, I learn. I still learn from you all the time. I can satisfy my intellectual curiosity just by sitting in a meeting, and I love to hear your stories. Year after year, the marriages, the divorces, the children, the promotion, the bankruptcies, my goodness, we hear it all. We hear it all. And so I've been doing this now for a little over 24 years. And my goodness, my Shirelli, sponsorship has meant a great deal throughout my sobriety, but even more so in the last few months because of the roller coaster. And for some reason, when I talk to Sherry Lee, I hear it. I'm teachable with all of you, but when I'm talking to my sponsor, I feel that it's a spiritual connection and that she was sort of pre-chosen to directly give me the message of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I will not argue. And I have to be careful because I can be eloquent and I can be convincing and I can prepare my arguments very, very tidily. And last October, when I told her about this guy, she said, "Lynn, you know, that doesn't sound right to me. I don't think he's telling you the truth." "Oh, but Shirelli, he's done this, he's done that." And you know, I overrode her and then paid the price. Paid the price. And so I have, this is a little bit of wisdom, if there is anything else tonight. The first words out of her mouth, I must keep to my heart, regardless of what we say afterwards, because that's my little truth, which is divinely inspired. But yet, I must give you a disclaimer, if you're new, to explore all other avenues before you call your sponsor. I mean, they can be very unpredictable. Like, sounds like you need another job. A few years ago, I was managing this real estate office, and I'm not a manager of people, and I was miserable, and so were they. They were resentful of me. I was angry at them. I was afraid of them. I was getting paranoid. They were talking behind my back. I'd been doing this for 3 months. I had a nut here in my gut, and I just didn't want to go. So I called my sponsor on Thursday, and I tell her the story. And she said, "Well, in your prayers, ask your higher power to show you how you can help them be comfortable with you." So that sounds like a good idea. So I did that, and the next day I was fired. They had been praying too. So Friday, I called my sponsor. I said, "I don't like your prayers, but I need another one real quick." She said, "Pray for the perfect job and the patience to wait for it." Now, 2 days before that, on Wednesday, there was a message on my machine. "Lynn, this is Eileen with Legal Staff. You haven't been registered with us for months. We know you have a great job, but we have this opportunity as a legal assistant, and we just thought that we'd let you know." Now, on Wednesday, being a legal assistant with my education and resume just didn't make any sense. But on Friday, I had a sudden change of attitude. So I called Eileen and I said, "You won't believe this." She said, "This is spooky. I don't even know why I called you in the first place." So I started that job the following Monday, to that owner's dismay. And would you know, they trained me in patent prosecution, which had become extremely popular since then, which is the cause of my having my own little company now, Just Patent Services, Inc., which eventually I can make into a way where I can work out of my home and have people working for me, which has been sort of a dream, but didn't know I had the skill that I could use this way. All that because I was fired on Thursday. I was not going to take that job. And one more time, how this wondrous program of ours work. Because I cannot foresee, I don't really know what's best for me. Gosh, I wish I could pick men the way I pick puppies or girlfriends or sponsor. I have a horrible taste. Oh, I hope nobody out here I've ever dated. Oh my goodness gracious. gracious, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it that way. I don't know if you dated lately, but my goodness, they're out there. I have to tell you about this one. I met him at an AA function, and he'd been sober for several years. And he wants to take me out on Friday. And he said, what do you prefer, the sky, the sea, or the ground? I said, well, surprise me. So he showed up at my home on his Harley and rode us to a private airport where he had leased an airplane, made reservation in Palm Springs, and was going to fly us there for dinner. I was very impressed. And so he checked the plane and everything, and we take a seat, and he starts it, and he crashes it into the plane in front of us. I was surprised. But not as much as the people who were in the plane that we just crashed into the big hole. Oh, my goodness, they're out there. But you know, because I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous, I can still be single today, be childless, and yet have a very fulfilling life. Because we can find causes, we can go to meetings, be of service, we can go places. There isn't a day that's wasted. And although I stand alone, I feel complete. I feel complete. For someone who had to totally humiliate herself to go clean tiles because I thought I needed a man to take care of me, from there to here, there is no other way but Alcoholics Anonymous. I am a solitary person, and I like to share that because I've been told so often that some of you are ashamed or embarrassed or think there is something wrong because they never marry or because they need a lot of space or because they're on their own. I am a solitary person, and it's a part of my nature. But because I have you, I am not lonely or useless of living a life of total self-centeredness. That's just not the way it is. If you are new tonight, regardless of your background, who you are, your personality, regardless, please join us and let us bring love and allow this higher power to bring light. And join us and have this wonderful life. There are so many endless possibilities. And here we don't have to make decisions based on fear. We can make them based on love and trust that all will be well just around the corner. That roller coaster that's divinely designed for each and every one of us is safe. And I believe that my life may not be to satisfy all of my wishes and desires, but it is perfect for the needs of my soul. It is perfect so that this higher power can use me in order to have me do for his kids what they need to have done by me. Join us. Be with us. Although there are some times that can be very difficult, it's worth, like you said, not to drink through them and just walk through it. In my fifth year of sobriety, I think was my most difficult time. I remember waking up in the morning, curled up under the blanket, and I didn't want to do it one more day. I just didn't want to do it. I had holes in my shoes. I couldn't get a decent job in spite of all my effort. I just found out I hated my mother. The man I was dating told me everything that was wrong with me, and he was right. I was still feeling very much disconnected and isolated. totally alone, feeling fear, going to meetings, unable to share about it. And my sponsor could not think of anything I could do other than, moreover, less than, except just don't drink, Lynn. And I remember being very angry at my higher power. And after a day at work, I went to the beach by myself, and we had to have a talk. I said, you know, I understand that there are people who live very happily in obedience and poverty and chastity, but I haven't taken any vows. You have me confused with someone else, you know? And I had been an illegal alien, and I thought maybe my file had been lost in the shuffle somewhere. So you take care of all your other little kids. They go to Europe, they get married, they have promotion, and look at me, nothing is happening to me. And you know, it cleared up once more. And what I heard was, Lynn, your primary purpose is to stay sober. And you have done that successfully for 5 years. I love you, and I'm pleased with you. And to carry the message to the best of your ability when requested. And you have been doing that. And I'm pleased with you. And that's when I understood that it's not about fame, fortune, popularity, that this is about my higher power and me together doing what we can to help and be of service. At that moment, I believe I had a true surrender to my higher power's will for me. And thank goodness I didn't drink, because I would have missed it all. Thank goodness there was another meeting I could go to the following morning at 7 o'clock and another one that night at 8 o'clock, and 2 weeks later got the job and doubled the salary, and here we are tonight. So if you are new, this is why it's so important for you to be here with us, to get a phone list, to get a sponsor, to make friends, so when those walls hit, you have a way around them with us without drinking through them. My 16th year was also very difficult, but at a different level. Because I'm a solitary person, I can get away with breaking relationships easily and not look back. But I got a real job with 100 people, and within about 4 months, there were 4 people I was not going to talk to. That's a lot of hallways to avoid. And I was resentful, fearful, and my time had come to do another 4-step, 5-step, 6, 7, and 8, and to find another way to be in a relationship with people, not to be so sensitive. I was so proud of my sensitivity, like it may be a person better than you, until in the 12 by 12 I read that it's a handicap. And my sponsor said, Lynn, sensitive is towards other people's feelings. If it's about your own, you're just being touchy. That's right. And then to be able to forgive rather than hold up everything that people say under a magnifying glass, you know, to be able to relax all that a little bit. And today I have many coworkers, and I love them, and they love me. And it's such a wonderful feeling. Although I made a big mistake last December with my boss, and he's sort of making me pay back on a daily basis. And my sponsor said, I need to talk to him, but I'm still too afraid to approach him about it. And so even today, it's sort of staying in my heart, and it's bothering me. And I have such regret for the mistake that I made, which I have not repeated since. But I'm paying dearly for it, and I really hope that I can somehow mend that relationship with him sooner rather than later. Perhaps this evening you wonder if you are worthy of this beautiful life that we're speaking of, or perhaps your self-esteem or self-worth are so low that you cannot accept that this higher power might love you unconditionally. Or perhaps you've been here for a while, but you're going through a situation that appears insurmountable. And if so, I have a little story to share with you. A few years ago, I went to the pet store to buy food for my cat, and there was a rescue foundation there. They had 12 or 15 little doggies, all looking pretty boisterous and happy, except one, little Misty. Little Misty was half her weight. She was only 5 pounds. She'd been found out in the street. She was homeless, and she was emaciated. You could see all her rib. Fur was missing, flakes coming off her skin. She was dirty, coughing, scared. They just found her and put her in that cage. And so I put my hand in there, and I kissed it. And she kissed my hand, and I just started to cry. And I said, "You're coming home. We'll work it out." And see, that's how I pick my men. So that's the, see, that's a. And so I took Misty home. And my little Misty, well, now she's 12 pounds. She doubled her weight. We've been on a diet for about 4 years, and it's not working too well. And she has a little furry coat for winter and a little bikini with the lace around it for summer. And she loves the fresh salmon. And she sleeps, of course, in bed with me. And she wakes me up at 5:17 in the morning for breakfast. And it took me 4 years to question the fact that I would have to spring up to the command when she had dinner last night with me and treats in the evening. You know, that's like not with it. But anyway, she still had her breakfast at 5:17 this morning, no matter what. And this is my little girl, and she lives the life of a princess today, just like I do, and we're supporting through our own contributions. And in order for that pathetic 5-pound, nothing, abandoned, homeless little dog to have the life that she has today, this is what this wonderful higher power had to orchestrate for her. The lady who found her in the streets, who took her to the pound, and the people who were at the pound to receive her. And Penny, the president of the foundation, who goes to the pound every day to rescue the little dogs. And Penny, along with the help of volunteers who go to PetSmart every Saturday to show the dogs. Me, who passed by, who fell in love with her. And a friend of mine on the program who built a little enclosure for her so she would have a place to go during the day. Now, if this higher power can stoop so for a pathetic, nothing little dog, what do you think this higher power will not do for us? And if we were not ourselves dejected, coughing, wheezing, underfed, unwanted, some homeless, in our own cages, albeit of our own making, her problems certainly appear to be insurmountable. So if you are new this evening, I have good news. You've already been scooped up. We are your new adoptive family. Stay with us on a short leash. And what that means to me is take the steps every day. Have a sponsor. Have commitments. Go to meetings regularly. Read that big book. And some of those things are not necessarily mentioned in the big book, but the way that I look at this is I want to increase my chances to stay sober forever. I'm on a long-term plan. I know we stay sober just for today, but I really highly desire that sober condition for myself for the rest of my days. And so I want to increase my chances by doing as much of what you recommend as possible. So far, so good. And so this is another way of not arguing with what is said in Alcoholics Anonymous, to simply follow the suggestion. We pray and we meditate. I'll give you another little tip about praying. It is said that we don't pray for selfish things. Well, there is sort of a way around this. A few years ago, I wanted a new motorcycle. And so I got myself a prayer buddy, and I asked her to pray that I get the motorcycle. And I got it. See? So sponsors will tell you little tips like that that may not be in the big book. And would you know, I was sharing at a meeting up north a few weeks ago, and after the meeting, this gentleman came up to me and he said, "Lynn, I remember it was you, wasn't it?" I said, "What? Years ago, you told us the idea of a prayer buddy at the podium, and I thought, that's a great idea." So I got myself a prayer buddy. We both prayed that the other one get what they want. We both got it, and it was the worst year of our life. Bad idea. And then we meditate. Well, meditation is another sport altogether. But again, I want to do as much as I can as possible that you recommend. And so I was sober for a few months, and my sponsor said, "Well, yes, you're supposed to do it like 20 minutes. And you just quiet your mind. But I'm an alcoholic, and you already know we do things the big way. So I built a little altar, and I had incense and candles and spiritual images on the wall. And she'd said 20 minutes, so I put the kitchen timer right here, 20 minutes. And I crossed my legs, and I sat down. And then I heard a dog bark out in the street, and then my shoulder is sort of itching, but you can't scratch it because you can't move. And then I heard the humming of the refrigerator, and I began to salivate thinking about the ice cream I would have afterwards. And then I began to rehearse what I would tell that jerk the next time I saw him. And I was just getting to hating him all over again. And then I got worried about how I would pay for the rent in 3 weeks from now. Then my leg was going numb, and I opened my eye, and it'd been a minute and a half. We're busy. And it's still busy. But it's more loving. It's less fearful. There are some very happy voices now. And often enough, I will have string of days when I'm at peace and we are united and joined and enjoying each day. So it's not as crazy as it was, but I can still feel it like when I was going through those last few months with the real estate and the fear and all this, how I would get real busy in my mind again. Then I call Shirelli at 2:30. I checked with her daily for a few days. Just checking in, Shirelli, I have these fear and I hope it works out. And then I call her again tomorrow to be grounded, and lots of voices. But mostly, my head is a happy, loving place. And if you're new this evening, I promise you, you do this for a while. You do this for a while. And the fear and the guilt and the resentment, it will go away. It will be removed. I'd like to leave you tonight with a prayer. My sobriety date is June 22, 1982. And it's the most important piece of information to know about me. It's at the center of my being. It's the day when I came to you It's the day that the only good life I have ever known began. And I don't wear it like a jewel on a crown or a feather to a panache, but like a very, very special treasure in my heart. And my prayer tonight, along with well-being for Howard, is that all of us get to keep forever and ever the sobriety date that we have today. And I so thank you for mine. Enjoy yourself. Thank you.
We hope you've enjoyed this recording. To obtain additional copies, receive a free catalog of AA and Al-Anon talks, or to find out about our tape and CD of the Month Club, call Encore Audio Archives at 1-800-878-1308 or visit our website at www.12steptapes.com.